This talk is called Signposts to God. So I need to explain what I'm talking about first before we get into it. You know, usually I love intellectual arguments. And so I can make a lot of arguments for God based on an intellectual theme. You know, for example, the beginning of the universe. We can talk about the Big Bang, the beginning of life. We can look at the complexity of the cell. We can talk about fine-tuning in the universe, the fact that everything is exactly right, all of the constants of nature exactly right to have life here on Earth. We can talk about the uniqueness of Jesus compared to other religious leaders. We can talk about the resurrection and why that makes sense on a literal level, that he really did physically rise from the dead. We can talk about reliability of the Bible. We can look at manuscript evidence. And all of these things are terrific. I mean, they are. They're great ways to argue for the truth of Christianity, to make a case for the truth of Christianity. But, you know, today we live in what they call a postmodern culture. And a postmodern culture tends to look down or be suspicious of intellectual activity. It's much more feelings-oriented. And so I wanted to put together a talk, and that's what I have here, that are more common sense appeals to the truth of Christianity and the existence of God. And so we're going to cover five things that are shared feelings and beliefs that we have that people, I think, will agree with, that I think act as signposts toward the existence of a God. So the first is going to be consciousness and mind. The second will be morality and guilt. The third will be transcendent moments that we have. Fourth will be longings that we share. And number five will be the enigma of the human race. So we'll be talking about these five. So let's start with number one, consciousness and the mind. So the question is very simple. How did material, physical substances throughout the universe, how did those things all of a sudden get together and become self-aware? Now, it's just, again, common sense says we know that we are more than our brain. We have a mind. We have free will. We know that. We know that we chose clothes. We know that we can alter our behavior. We feel like we should have done one thing, but we chose to do another. And if our brains are simply the result of an unguided, physical, random process, why would we trust our brains? So these scientists that tell us all these things about the universe, why did they trust their knowledge unless there's something beyond the physical that made up their brain? So there we go. First of all is consciousness and the mind. As somebody said this, why on earth should all those complicated brain processes feel like anything from the inside? Why aren't we just brilliant robots capable of retaining information, of responding to noises and smells and hot saucepans, but dark inside, lacking an inner life? How could a lump of moist tissue inside your skull give rise to something as mysterious as the experience of being that lump and the body to which it's attached? So what's he saying? We're not robots. We know this. We're not dark on the inside. We have something mysterious called consciousness. Where did that come from? How can that come from physical objects? Rocks don't have consciousness. Hydrogen atoms don't have consciousness. The ocean waves don't have consciousness. Physical objects don't have consciousness, but we do. There's something different. And we say God breathed into us a soul, a consciousness. How about number two? We have feelings of morality and guilt. We think there are real objective rights and wrongs. We complain all the time about, hey, that's not right. We should do X. We should stop doing Y. These are not just these are not just preferences that we have. These are not just, well, I kind of feel that way. We believe there are definite right and wrong things. We feel that it was wrong for Nazis to kill Jews. It's not just, I don't like that they did that. We feel that that was a legitimate wrong. We have a sense of ought. In other words, we look at other people and we confront wrong in their lives and we say, you ought not to do that. You shouldn't do that. Well, how can we come up with that idea of morality if we're making it up as we go? The other person can just spin around and turn to us and say, hey, who are you? You're one person, I'm another person, I have my morality, you have yours, shut up. But that isn't the way we feel about it. We feel that there are certain wrongs in the society, and we take on people who have those wrongs. That's just a common sense belief we all share. And what about feelings of guilt? Do we have feelings of guilt? Of course we do. We have our own moral codes. Each one of us has a moral code, and we can't even meet that. Forget the Ten Commandments. Forget the moral codes throughout the Bible or Islam or other books. We can't meet our own moral codes. We have a feeling of guilt. And maybe it's because we are guilty. We can't fix ourselves. So where does that come from, that feeling of guilt? If we're just animals, why do we have that feeling of guilt? Why do we have a feeling of a morality beyond us? How about number three? So we got, where does consciousness come from? God's a good explanation. How about morality? The feelings that some things are just simply right and wrong, and that they're not dependent on how we feel about them. That leads to the idea of a God. Number three, we all have what are called transcendent moments, where we see something beyond us that thrills our soul or brings us agony. And we look back in Genesis 1. It says, God said, let's make man in our image. There's something spiritual in us. Ecclesiastes says, God set eternity in the hearts of people. So it may be a story, it might be a song, it might be some kind of sight that will stir us far beyond just our physical nature. Rocks are not excited about seeing anything. Rocks are not interested in stories. But every time you see a sunrise or a sunset, we don't look at it and say, well, light rays are emanating in a certain way. No, we look at it and we say, that's beautiful. Just for a few moments, we're transfixed as we look at this. Or we see a newborn baby. We don't say, well, there's another child that somebody's going to have to care for. We look at that baby, those bright eyes and that big smile and the giggle and the puffy cheeks, and we say, oh, it's new life, and we're excited about that. Or maybe some of you have gone out to a starry desert site at night, and you've looked up and you've seen the Milky Way, and you've seen a shooting star, and you've seen these planets, and you've seen beautiful multicolored stars out there. And you don't just say, there are a lot of stars in the universe. You say, wow, we're part of this universe. Maybe it's a rainbow. We see a rainbow. And we don't just say, interesting how color is refracted from raindrops due to sunlight, creating a prism. No, we write songs about somewhere over the rainbow. We think about the gold at the end of the rainbow, whatever it is. We have these ideas of the rainbow. How about music? Does music stir us? Does a symphony stir us? Does a song with beautiful lyrics cause our hearts to rejoice? Yeah, there's a little quote I wanted to share with you here. Music speaks what cannot be expressed, soothes the mind, and gives it rest, heals the heart, and makes it whole, flows from heaven to the soul. I remember a couple of years back, I was watching a YouTube of a concert, and the person who was conducting the concert led the group in Amazing Grace. And then they panned out to the audience, and this was not a church, this was a secular setting. And people had tears running down their faces as they heard Amazing Grace. And we all have that experience. Why is that? Why are we so moved? Why are we so touched? Because we have a spiritual element in us that resonates with things like that. Books can move us. I mean, think about Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. It's a fantasy. It didn't really happen. It's not set on this earth. Well, it's set on this earth, but not the earth we're familiar with. It's full of creatures that don't exist. And yet we read this story or we see the movie version and we're uplifted and we're horrified and we're depressed and we have all these emotions surging through us as we see what Sam and Frodo go through. In my case, I love the story of Ernest Shackleton, the man who went out to the South Pole, tried to explore the South Pole and all the disasters that happened to him and the courage that he demonstrated. That is so uplifting. Well, why does it thrill us so much? Because these are all transcendent moments that take us beyond our physical selves. Maybe it's a movie. Many of us saw Saving Private Ryan, and we're so grateful to the vets that went through these horrifying experiences. It's gut-wrenching to watch, but we feel so proud that there are people willing to suffer for our country. Maybe it's the movie Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. We see what Aslan goes through to save these kids, the death that he has to endure, and it reminds us of the death of Jesus, but again, extremely uplifting. All right, so that's a third thing. Here's a fourth thing that I think is a great signpost to the idea of a God. We have longings that are not fulfilled in this world. Fish don't have longings. They're in their environment, and that's all there is to it. But we have this great desire for beauty. We have a desire for everlasting life. We have a desire for true love that never ends. We have a desire for perfect justice. We have a desire for significance in our lives. We want meaning. We mourn people who die young. We honor heroes. We give out awards. Why do we have these longings? Because God's placed them in our hearts to say that there is a perfect place out there somewhere, heaven, whatever you want to call it, that can't be met by this world's money, by this world's fame, by this world's allures. Number five, the enigma of the human race. What do I mean by that? Humans, and I think this is a great pointing gesture to God, humans are both better and worse than animals. If we're just an animal, why do we do things that are so horrifying, and why do we do things that are so far more ethereal and beautiful than animals do? We create these wonderful spectacles at the Olympics. We create this beautiful music. We create wonderful songs. We do all these wonderful things that you say, that's amazing. People did that. We show courage. We show love. It's a wonderful experience. Then on the other hand, what do? Well, let's take Germany. Germany produced some of the best thinkers, some of the best poets, some of the best musicians ever. And then what did they do in the 20th century? They produced Adolf Hitler. They produced World War II. They produced poison gas. They killed 6 million Jews, as well as a lot of other quote-unquote undesirables. So what's going on there? It's terrible what we can do, but it's beautiful what we can do. So these are just signposts. These do not prove there's a God, but they show the leanings of the human heart, consciousness in the mind. Where'd that come from? It had to come from outside the physical world. Morality and guilt. Morality has to exist beyond us, otherwise it's just we get our morality at the point of a gun. We just force people into our morality. Where does our guilt come from? We're not living up to standards. God's placed that in our hearts. These transcendent moments that we have. Where do we get these wonderful feelings, this uplifting feeling, or maybe this depressing feeling? The longings that we all share, the wonder and the wretchedness of humans, these all, I think, are extremely powerful signposts saying there is a God out there.